Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Sog Kantum, Top Secret Missions in Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia, 1968 to 1969, by Joe Parnar and Robert Dumont. Narrated by Corey M. Snow. Foreword by John L. Plaster. America's largest covert action organization since World War II was MACV-SOG, the deceptively named Military Assistance Command Vietnam Studies and Observation Group. The public, of course, never heard of SOG those many years ago, and very, very few of those who fought in Vietnam knew of SOG's existence, or its top secret operations in Laos, Cambodia, and North Vietnam. When SOG disbanded in 1972, its highly classified records were ordered to be destroyed. For a quarter century, SOG's story remained largely unknown until the declassification process began in 1995. That year, I started research for my book, SOG, The Secret Wars of America's Commandos in Vietnam. After each operation, I knew, a detailed after-action report was sent to Saigon, and surely these thousands of reports would yield incredible stories of courage, sacrifice, and triumph. Think of it. First-person accounts of 10 Medal of Honor actions, plus individual debriefs of hundreds of our Green Beret Recon and Hatchet Force men, freshly recorded within a day of their return from their top-secret missions. To my utter disappointment, it turned out that not one of these reports had survived the wholesale document destruction of 1972. Determined to tell SOG's story despite this lack of records, it required 2 years to track down and interview more than 100 SOG veterans, obtain citations for numerous Valor Awards, consult POW/MIA reports, and much, much more. This mosaic of facts and interviews formed the basis for my SOG history. Despite having given that effort my all, I was disappointed that so many additional SOG men's great deeds remained unknown. I think every SOG veteran who came home felt an obligation to honor and recognize our comrades, especially those who did not come home. And there were many. Knowing of their incredible displays of courage and great sacrifices, their stories needed to be told, lest they remain in oblivion forever. I was not the only SOG veteran who felt this way. After my book was published, several other SOG comrades authored their own accounts of command and control North, Central, and South. In 2018, my longtime friend, Joe Parnar, a Special Forces medic and fellow CCC vet, wrote SOG Medic, an excellent first-person addition to the growing list of SOG memoirs. However, like me, Joe knew that more stories needed to be told, and more veterans of SOG's cross-border missions deserved recognition. Joe spent several more years expanding his research to track down and interview numerous veterans, not only our Green Beret Recon and Hatchet Force men, but crewmen from our troop lift helicopters and helicopter gunships, fighter pilots, and many other participants in SOG's top-secret world. Ask anyone who ran recon in SOG, and you'll be told their lives were saved by courageous aviators. They had to be included, too. Thanks to the internet, Joe networked to find men not heard from since 1971, and, through them, found still more witnesses and participants. Assisted by Robert Dumont, his co-author and editor, Joe assembled these voluminous transcripts and then masterfully weaved them into coherent, complete stories, a true oral history. Their book is well organized, well edited, and its stories well told. Rich in first-person accounts, they describe some of SOG's most dramatic operations from multiple perspectives. Ground commanders, team leaders, helicopter pilots, forward air controllers, medics, and SOG's warriors. The resulting stories flow smoothly, almost seamlessly. Parnar and Dumont held their narrations and explanations to the absolute minimum, largely letting the stories tell themselves. What especially impressed me is that the men Joe interviewed did not thump their chests or pat their own backs. After fighting alongside men you respect, witnessing their courage, their selflessness, and tragically, their losses, you cannot help but learn humility. No better example of this is Joe Parnar himself. Joe risked his life many times to save the lives of our wounded, often exposing himself to the same enemy fire that had hit them. He was wounded 3 times. Yet, it is others that this book features. Nothing tells of Joe's humility so sincerely as when he cleaned the body of John Keddenberg, who had given his life to save a teammate and already was destined to receive the Medal of Honor posthumously. Washing his body and preparing him for shipment back to the States, Joe wrote, is the greatest honor I have ever had. Thank you for this book, Joe. You're a fine man. John L. Plaster, U.S. Army Special Forces, Mack V. SOG, 1968-1971. Author's Preface. SOG Khantoum is a collection of narrative accounts of Mack V. SOG operations originating at FOB 2, Command and Control Central, CCC, from April 26, 1968, through April 10, 1969. These operations took place both in-country and across the fence into Cambodia and Laos, near the tri-border area of the Central Highlands. It is not a comprehensive account of every mission carried out during that time period, nor are the authors asserting these were necessarily the most significant ones. Each mission, however, was noteworthy in its own right. The narratives are primarily based on information obtained by the authors following publication of SOG Medic, Joe Parnar's personal story of his time with the Studies and Observation Group, SOG, which closely corresponds to the time frame for this new book. Although there is some carryover, SOG Khantoum differs greatly from SOG Medic, which was entirely told from Joe's viewpoint. That book detailed his reasons for enlisting in the Army, his special forces training, and his experiences with SOG during the Vietnam War. It was very much an I book. In some of the missions recounted herein, Joe was a participant and contributes his own version of events in concert with others who were likewise participants. Other missions on which he was not present were researched through official award orders, eyewitness statements, and published sources, as well as by interviews, emails, and soliciting the shared recollections of those who were present. Whenever appropriate, the accounts are narrated in first person, based on the testimony and memories of individual personnel. Of course, combat narratives can be difficult to shape, given the extreme and stressful circumstances from which they arise. Not everyone experiences or recalls things the same way. Moreover, because SOG operations were classified, there was no central source of information readily available to the men who took part in them. After action reports were forwarded to Military Assistance Command Vietnam in Saigon and destroyed at the Forward Operating Base, FOB, unless they were directly involved, the personnel carrying out a particular mission were largely unaware of what happened on other missions. The major exception to this occurred during the informal get-togethers and downtime spent in the club over beers, where first-hand knowledge was exchanged and innumerable stories got told and retold. As a result, the legends and oral histories of such celebrated figures as Jerry Mad Dog Shriver, Clarence Happy Webb, Medal of Honor recipient Bob Howard, and legendary 10 Joe Gladiator Walker, to name just some, became a permanent feature of SOG lore at FOB2 CCC that would eventually find its way into books once they came to be written. The primary intent of the authors of SOG Quantum has been to gather as many observations and recollections from as many sources as could be found, and then to merge the various perspectives, unique insights, and distinctive voices into accurate and compelling narratives. Thus, we have attempted in this book to let the facts and the men who were there speak for themselves. Joe Parnar and Robert Dumont. Introduction. The Military Assistance Command, Vietnam, Studies and Observations Group, MACV-SOG, pronounced MACV-SOG, was a highly classified, multi-service United States Special Operations Unit that engaged in covert, unconventional warfare missions during the Vietnam War. The Joint Chiefs of Staff created SOG on 24 January 1964 as a subsidiary command of the Military Assistance Command, Vietnam, MACV. Its official cover objective was to analyze lessons learned during combat missions involving all branches of the military. In actuality, it was a joint unconventional task force that would conduct and support covert strategic missions in Laos and South Vietnam, and later in Cambodia. It included an air studies group, a maritime studies group, and a psychological studies group, which operated radio stations broadcasting into North Vietnam. The largest element was the ground studies group, aka OP-35, which launched missions from a number of FOBs, forward operating bases, located around the country. Author Frank Greco notes in his book Running Recon that while initial staffing of these groups drew from all branches of the military, most OP-35 personnel were drawn from U.S. Army Special Forces, Green Berets, because of their unconventional warfare background and counterinsurgency skills. Until the year 1968, SOG recon operations were directed by a unit designated as Command and Control, CNC, Detachment, the headquarters of which was located at Forward Operating Base 4 in Da Nang at the base of Marble Mountain. Initially, there were five other forward operating bases in SOG, all reporting to CNC. These were FOB 1 at Phu Bai, FOB 2 at Con Tum, FOB 3 at Khe San, FOB 5 at Banh Mi Thuat, and FOB 6 at Non Yak Tau. FOBs 1, 3, and 4 covered northern Laotian targets, FOB 2 covered the tri-border area of Laos, Cambodia, and the central highlands of Vietnam, and FOB 5 and FOB 6 covered Cambodian targets further south. SOG missions were primarily intelligence-gathering operations that involved the monitoring of enemy activities, installations, and movements along the Ho Chi Minh Trail, a strategic supply route that began in eastern Laos and continued southwards into Cambodia and South Vietnam itself. Known to the North Vietnamese as the Truong Song Road after the mountain road it partly traversed, the 1st North Vietnamese Army, NVA, combat regiment to use it entered South Vietnam in 1965. In actuality, it was not a single trail, or even a winding road, but a network of interconnected roads, foot trails, and pathways. It could be utilized by trucks carrying supplies and materiel, as well as North Vietnamese troops who typically traveled south on foot from 4 to 5 days, then rested for a day while being resupplied with rations. Besides trucks and troops utilizing it, ox carts and bicycles were also part of the traffic on the trail. While the foot and bicycle portions of it were 2 to 5 feet wide, trucks were accommodated by roads as wide as 18 feet. Its heaviest use came during the northeast monsoon, dry season, from mid-October to mid-March. As aerial visual reconnaissance and photographs, and even satellite surveillance and radio intercepts were of limited use, a ground unit such as SOG that was capable of operating covertly in a hostile and dangerous environment and able to directly observe activities along the trail became a necessity. Thus, covert reconnaissance missions were conducted by SOG recon teams, RTs, also known as spike teams, STs, that were typically named after states of the Union in the U.S., or poisonous snakes, weapons, tools, and even weather phenomena. The teams usually launched by helicopter from the 6 different forward operating bases, FOBs, located in the northernmost area of the country, the Central Highlands, and further south near Ban Mae Thuat and Ho Nhoc Tao, which was slightly north of Saigon. Team sizes varied, depending on the nature of the mission, but 4 to 8 team members was fairly typical. Recon team personnel consisted of an American team leader designated as the 1-0 and an assistant team leader designated as the 1-1. SOG was unique in that leadership of a team was not awarded on the basis of rank, but on the basis of experience and the evaluation of a team leader's overall skill levels. A third American might also be on a mission and was designated as the 1-2, whose primary responsibility often was to carry the PRC-25 radio used by the Team 1-0 to communicate with the FOB either directly or via a radio relay site or with a FAC, forward air control, aircraft that was on the scene. Other members of an RT consisted of indigenous personnel, Indigs, who usually were Montagnards, Nungs, or South Vietnamese nationals. The designation of 0-1 was for the indigenous team leader, with at least one of the indigenous members of a recon team acting as an interpreter who communicated the orders of the American 1-0 to the other indigenous team members. In many cases, it would be an indigenous team member who walked point for a team as it proceeded on its mission, with this person carrying either a rifle or sometimes an M79 single-shot, shoulder-fired grenade launcher. An important component of a mission was the role played by Covey, the code name for the pilot of the forward air control aircraft. The Covey pilots flew small spotter planes and maintained radio contact with both the teams on the ground and other support aircraft involved in a mission, including the helicopters. Thus, the FACs could coordinate activities between the aforementioned elements as well as monitor enemy movements and actions that were best observed from the air. Often, the Covey pilots were accompanied by a second person on board the aircraft known as the Covey Rider, who typically was an ex-SOG team member and would be in direct radio contact with a Team 1-0 and able to relay his unique perspective and provide essential advice on the presence and movements of hostile forces. To an RT-1-0 on the ground, the reassuring voice of an experienced Covey rider was a considerable morale booster. For the recon teams, the primary purpose of a mission was to collect intelligence on NVA traffic of personnel and materiel, including numbers of enemy troops, location of facilities, supply depots and transfer points, anti-aircraft gun positions, bridges, fuel dumps, fuel pipelines, and the like. RTs monitoring the trail also undertook limited sabotage missions, tapped telephone lines, planted electronic sensors, and scattered doctored ammunition along the way for unwary North Vietnamese soldiers to gather and try to make use of. If the opportunity arose to snatch a prisoner, the team was told to take advantage of the situation, although these missions were especially dangerous, as they were often improvised and involved making contact with a larger force in the attempt to capture a single individual. Nevertheless, the risk was often deemed worth taking, as the capturing of a prisoner on a mission resulted in a reward of a week's R&R for Americans and a wristwatch or monetary award for indigenous team members. Recon teams were always well-armed. The signature weapon employed by SOG personnel was the Kar 15, a short-barreled, folding-stock submachine gun version of the M16 rifle used by most troops in Vietnam. While many American SOG team members favored the Kar 15, others preferred Swedish Ks or M16s, which were often carried by indigenous team members. In addition, team members carried sidearms and a specially developed SOG knife that could either be used as a weapon or as a tool. M18A1 Claymore anti-personnel mines were used extensively by RTs. These were 3.5-pound directional mines with 1.5 pounds of C4 explosive behind several hundred ball bearings that could be detonated electronically or rigged with a tripwire. Claymores were often emplaced to cover approaches to a team's RON, remain overnight, location, or on trails when a team was being pursued. They were also employed on ambushes and prisoner snatches. Another commonly used pursuit deterrence device was the M14 anti-personnel mine known as a toe popper, which could take off a foot or at least seriously injure one. An enemy soldier wounded by a toe popper would need the assistance of a second soldier, thus reducing the ranks of enemy pursuers. Although SOG recon missions were not combat operations as such, and the principal aim was to avoid contact with the enemy, when necessary, the heavily armed teams could fight back quite fiercely. The Presidential Unit Citation, which was awarded to SOG in April 2001, stated, "Pursued by human trackers and even bloodhounds, these small teams outmaneuvered, outfought, and outran their numerically superior foe." SOG teams were supported by helicopter gunships and tactical air. TAC air included jet fighters, fast movers, but the most favored air support for a team under siege came from World War II vintage Douglas A-1 Sky Raiders, known as SPADs, piloted by USAF personnel that provided close-in precision fire, low and slow, on enemy forces. Other propeller-driven Air Force gunships with colorful nicknames like Puff the Magic Dragon, Shadow, and Spectre that were converted cargo planes could also deliver incredible amounts of firepower in support of SOG operations. SOG recon team missions were conducted in a target box, which on a map was a 6x6 kilometer area with an alphanumeric designation. Most missions involved initial insertion by helicopters into the target box. The mission's purpose, typically, was to observe enemy movements and activities and not to make contact. In many cases, the recon of an area led to yet another recon or airstrikes on the enemy's position or facility. A mission might last anywhere from a single day or less if, for instance, a team was shot out while attempting to insert, to several days that a team might spend directly observing the enemy or searching for signs of its past activities that could be in the form of discovered documents, previously used supply depots, abandoned equipment, or even hastily dug graves. Other types of recon missions were point recons of specific locations within a target box to determine what was there, e.g. an underwater bridge, a truck park, a supply cache, a bivouac, or rest area being prime examples. Other missions included road and river watches to closely surveil enemy troop movements and activities, the emplacement of wiretaps and sensors on enemy communication lines, and BDAs, which were bomb damage assessment missions following B-52 airstrikes on enemy troops and infrastructure. From Running Recon. Intelligence was needed to measure and locate enemy traffic on the Ho Chi Minh Trail. Large-scale airstrikes, known as ARC-lights, by U.S. Air Force B-52 bombers had been authorized against the trail in Laos, but worthy objects were difficult to locate and bomb damage was difficult to assess. Intelligence was needed to identify enemy activity on the trail and to locate worthwhile targets for the Air Force. For teams operating out of FOB-2 CCC at Con Dum, their missions took place in the southern panhandle section of Laos and the northeast reaches of Cambodia. A radio relay site on a mountaintop in northern Laos had been established by SOG personnel in 1967 and was known by the codename Leghorn. Of course, the U.S. government officially denied any American presence in these areas across the border from South Vietnam. While the standard uniform worn at the FOB by the Americans was olive-green jungle fatigues and jungle boots, along with a green beret, there was no standard uniform for SOG team members engaged in a mission. Outfits were sterile so that no particular national origin was obvious and without any insignia or identification of a particular unit. Jungle fatigues with any type of labeling being removed were worn and further camouflaged after being spray-painted with black stripes. Trousers would be tight-fitting to prevent them from being snagged in the thick jungle undergrowth and might be doused with insect repellent to deter leeches when moving through creeks and streams. Sometimes, a team's point man might even wear an NVA uniform and carry an AK-47, so that there would be some hesitation on the part of enemy troops upon an initial encounter. There was no standard SOG headgear, although boonie hats and olive drab headscarves were often worn by team members. Dog tags, ID cards, or any item that indicated an individual's name or nationality could not be brought on a mission. The gear, ammunition, and food supplies carried by an individual team member could weigh as much as 80 pounds. Besides the recon teams running missions in-country and across the border into Laos and Cambodia, larger reaction elements were also a part of SOG. These were company-sized units, i.e., three combined platoons, called hatchet forces. Like the recon teams, they were led by American personnel, typically 5 to 6 Americans, with approximately 42 indigenous troops under their command. Their primary responsibility was to exploit targets discovered by the RTs and to come to their aid should the need arise. An even larger reaction exploitation force was the SLAM, Search, Locate, Annihilate, Monitor Company, under the command of a captain or an experienced lieutenant. The Vietnam conflict marked the greatly expanded utilization of the helicopter in wartime. SOG operations would have been impossible without the support of the helicopters and their crews. Bell UH-1 Huey helicopters with 4-man crews, a pilot, a co-pilot, a crew chief who oversaw the aircraft's maintenance, and a door gunner wielding a mounted M60 machine gun, were typically used for inserting recon teams and larger units on missions, and for retrieving these same people at the end of a mission, or even before the end, if things had gone bust. Helicopter companies supporting SOG operations out of FOB-2 CCC at Con Tum were part of the 52nd Combat Aviation Battalion. SLICS carried people and cargo, while gunships provided cover for the SLICS and personnel operating on the ground. The individual companies of the 52nd Battalion were the 57th Assault Helicopter Company, AHC, comprising the Gladiators, SLICS, and Cougars, gunships. The 119th AHC comprising the Gators, SLICS, and Crocs, gunships. The 170th AHC comprising the Bikinis, SLICS, and the Buccaneers, gunships. The 189th AHC comprising the Ghost Riders, SLICS, and Avengers, gunships. Also supporting SOG operations at CCC was the 361st Armed Helicopter Escort Company, a.k.a. the Pink Panthers, which were high-speed, 2-man crew attack helicopters known as Cobras. They were first deployed in the fall of 1968, and their activities and roles on a particular mission had to be coordinated with those of the older, slower, and less maneuverable Huey Charlie model gunships. Another notable group supporting SOG missions from the air were the crew members of a collection of old Sikorsky CH-34 helicopters.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?